Við skulum ekki vakum til marnætur. Það margt sem myrkrið veit, minn hugur þungur.
Welcome to Eerie Iceland. Whether you're captivated by folklore, paranormal, sorcery, the hidden people, haunted things, people or locations in Iceland, you've come to the right place. Here, you'll venture into the dark side of Iceland. I'm Anne.
I'm Vanessa. We're two girl bosses who are obsessed with all of these things. Will you dare to follow us into this unexplainable realm?
Anne, are you dumping black sand on the table?
Sure am, Vanessa.
Let me guess. Sand is your prop for this week.
Damn, Vanessa. You need to add Captain Obvious to your resume.
Did you bring a vacuum cleaner at least?
Well, I am a wedding planner, so I'm going to say the answer is yes on that.
Okay. Good.
So what can you tell me about Skeiðarársandur, Vanessa?
It's a beach.
Okay, beach, yeah. So
right? It's a beach, right?
It is a beach. You are correct. Sandur does mean, in Icelandic, does mean beach. Agreed. But do you know where it is?
Full disclosure, no idea.
Okay, so I'm going to give you a little geographical Iceland lesson in this little realm right now. So Skeiðarársandur directly translates to spoon river sand. I mean, how freaking fun is that, right? I love these translations. It's actually a glacier floodplain that is in South Iceland, extending from the foothills of the glacier outlets Skeiðarársandur Jökull and Skaftafellsjökull, which both are glacier outlets that come down from our largest glacier in Iceland, Vatnajökull, which means water glacier. Vatna meaning water and jökull meaning glacier. And a fun fact about all of this is that it's our biggest in Europe. Did you know that, Vanessa?
Ooh, fun.
Yay. So the Black Sand Desert runs out to the Atlantic Ocean between the towns of Kirkjubæjar Cluster and the Skaftafell National Park. That's like a total of 1,300 kilometers squared, or for our American listeners, it's like 321 acres, if you can think about that.
Whoa.
Right. It's huge. Also, to connect our episodes, this is an area that is heading further east of our Laki Volcano and the Fire Priest episode. So if you're traveling, you know, further east, you guys can kind of picture this as you're going. Or if you're listening to it now when you're on the road, that's even more exciting. This area is notorious for unpredictable weather, especially since it's so close to the glacier. Some people even say that it has its own microclimate and that the weather forecasters can't even begin to predict what's going to happen in this area. So outside of this black sand, you might wonder if there's anything else out there, right?
Is there?
While the vegetation may be sparse, the area is extensive and flat, with vast stretches of black volcanic sands which intertwine with riverbeds. The harsh conditions of the black sands make it challenging for the vegetation and the bird life to thrive. However, this area has actually become home in the last century or so to birch trees that have started growing there in little patches, little clusters around. As you drive through, you'll see. And has also become a nesting area for the great skua. Do you know what a great skua is, Vanessa?
Man, I wish I could say yes, but I don't know what it is.
That's okay. So it's a big-ass brown bird that will attack you if you go near its nest. Like, so bad, if you're in the area, you should try to wave your hand above your hand, like your head, so it won't fuck you up and eat your brain.
Whoa.
Like, I'm not kidding you. Like, there's been some instances in summer where I have, like, grabbed a piece of lupine, like, broke it off, you know, and waved that above my head so the little motherfuckers don't come and attack me. And I'm not even near their nests. Like, I'm far away from their nests, but they're just like, hey, if you're going to be near me, I'm going to fuck you up. They're very, very territorial birds, and they're huge. Like, I actually underestimated how large they actually are until I saw it in person.
Gee, Anne, thanks. You fear unlocked.
Okay, so I digress. So you'll drive through the Skeiðarársandur area if you're heading southeast, because the Ring Road, or Route 1, as we call it, actually crosses it. Travelers often drive in this area on their way to popular tourist attractions such as Vatnajökull National Park, Jökulsárlón, and Fjallsárlón glacier lagoons, and all of the east, like southeast coast. But Vanessa, did you know that Skeiðarársandur is known for more things than being a subglacial floodplain, a black sand desert, and a waypoint to East Iceland?
Again, ashamed.
Don't be. But let's talk murder and let's talk ghosts and the occurrences of both on this eerie black sand desert.
I'm excited.
Here we go. The tale I'm going to start with today is a true crime story, and one so famously eerie that a song was written about it by a famous Icelandic artist. And in fact, it was actually one of my all-time favorite Icelandic songs. Shall we begin?
Do tell.
All right, let's do it. So allow me to introduce you to Grettir Sigurðr Arnason, who was born on January 10th, 1942. A man originally from Eyjafjarðarsveitina, which is an area under Skaftafellsjökull. And in the start of the 1980s, he was in his 40s and employed by the Icelandic Road Authority, or some form of what Americans might refer to as AAA, right? The folks that'll help you roadside if something happens, right? He was tall, bearded, dark hair, and had an official presence about him, right? It was 1982, and there wasn't a big tourist scene in Iceland back then because, heck, it was freaking expensive to get here, right? Plus, not much attention came onto our North Atlantic island until Eyjafjallajökull goes off in April of 2010. But the tourists that did come, maybe at that time, were younger, found their way around the island by hitchhiking sometimes during summer. That was like a common thing. This specific day was Monday, the 16th of August. Grettir was heading west from the southeastern town of Höpp. This is where he spots two French tourists who were sisters and named Maria and Yvette. There they were with their thumbs up, hoping to hitch a ride to Skaftafell National Park so they could go and explore it on their adventures. Grettir pulls over and offers to give these two ladies a ride to their desired destination, or pretty close to it, like almost like, hey, jump in, you're on my way home, right? The hitchhiking sisters initially felt safe. As they said, the vehicle Grettir was driving looked like a police car, and he came across as an authoritative character. He dropped them off at the hut for travelers on Skeiðarársandur, and the Icelandic word for this type of house is called sæluhús, which directly translates to pleasure house. Now. Before you say anything, I know you're going to say something. So now I know our listeners and people out there might think something else that a pleasure house might mean, but likely the name derives from the pleasure a weary traveler might experience upon arriving to this refuge in a storm.
Okay, that makes sense. I was thinking something completely different.
Right. I knew that's where your dirty little brain was going to go, and that's why I had that ready for you.
Thank you for that.
Okay. They thanked him, said goodbye, had dinner in the hut, signed the guest book, and went to sleep. But one of the really weird facts that kind of resonated with me about this story was when the gals wrote in the guest book, they thanked the sheriff for dropping them off. Like, it gives me goosebumps, literally, like full body goosebumps right now when I say that. So what the fuck is that about? Do you think he blatantly lied to them and said he was?
Well, I was going to ask you that. Sounds like a power play. Like, sees beautiful girls, thinks, how can I appear cooler or, like, tougher or more advanced or, you know, not controlling, but, like, cool. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, I think he totally lied, to be honest.
I think so, too. I 100% think that, too. I think that, like, I don't know if he thought he was going to get into something that night or something with them. I'm not sure. I think everything that I read, it didn't speak of a wife or anything at that time. So maybe dude's just like a lonely countryside dude and just thought he would make a connection with these girls. And when they weren't very, I don't know. I'm insinuating this is not part of the story. This is just talk between Vanessa and I. I'm going to get back to the story. So fast forward to 11:30 p.m. The girls were sleeping. So they awoke to Gretzar at the door with a flashlight in one hand and a gun in the other. He knocks on that door and he implies that they were under arrest for having drugs. Like, some of the reports that I read said that he told them that he was like under the representation of like the police in HUP or in Akureyri or, you know, somewhere else, and that it was insinuated that he was arresting them because they were thought to have had drugs and that was like not tolerable at that time, right? So the girls refuse to leave with him though, because they're like, we are not, like, we don't have drugs and there's absolutely no reason why we need to leave with this man, right? So at one point, to prove this, they let him inside, allowing him to search their bags to prove their innocence of his accusations, right? They thought maybe, like, you know, all of a sudden, if he found nothing, that maybe they would just leave him alone. I mean, common. I would think that, too, if I was in that situation as well.
Smart, too.
Yeah. So then at that point, things are feeling a little fishy. So they demand him to give identification, and the girls ask for it. Like, clearly, and all he could show was a basic ID card that had no authority, no credentials or anything behind it. So not buying Gretzar's scam, the girls stayed adamant about not leaving with him because he was insistent. He was insisting that they needed to leave with him. Our fake sheriff's anger grew and he fled the hut. However, when he returned, he had metal wire in his hand and the girls' fear escalated off the charts. Both girls at this point beg him to just leave them alone and go away, pretend none of this happened. But instead, he goes back outside again and returns with a rock in his hand. Maria sacrifices herself to save her sister, so she stands between them. He knocks her out. And while that happens, the sister, Yvette, runs out the door into the night across the sand. But the next thing Maria knows is that she's awakened by her sister screaming, the sound of a gunshot, and a repeat of both. Then she heard a car start. After, she said everything goes silent, and she passes out again until the police arrive to save her.
Whoa.
Yeah, I know. I got like full body chills, like no freaking joke, right? In the meantime, Gretzar had indeed shot her sister, Yvette, twice. She tried to flee across the black sands away from him, but he puts her in the back of his vehicle, maybe still partially alive and upset, clearly dying. But another driver who was a ranger passes by while this is happening and asks some questions. Because he hears and sees and, you know, is like really trying to understand what has happened, because this is so foreign at this time, right? Like in Iceland, we don't have murders happening. We don't have this kind of shit happening like in many of the other world and, you know, countries outside of Iceland, right? So Gretzar lies and says that there was a car accident back at the hut. He asked the ranger to leave and get help. So he did. And that's actually how Maria was found, thankfully, right? And it's said that when Maria, when she was like in the midst of like passing out and getting consciousness and all of this, the police actually came into the hut area, like the drive near it where they had originally been dropped off. And she saw them start pulling away, and she somehow musters the strength to get up and run after the police car. Because remember, this is all happening in the middle of the night. Dude shows up at like 11:30 at night. So now we're going into the next day, right? It's still dark. Even though it's August, you know, we still have a level of darkness that's happening here in the south at least, right? And that's where Skeiðarsandur is actually. And so she actually stops the police, and they are able to, you know, realize like what's happened. She's, you know, hysterical and obviously tells them. But at this point, they can't find him again. He's not at the same location that the ranger originally passed him. So you might wonder what happened to Yvette's body, right?
Yeah.
So the next day, the police find Gretar's vehicle by Svina Svjatljökull, which directly translates to Pig Mountain Glacier. But Gretar was nowhere to be found. They only found his vehicle. But sadly, Yvette's lifeless body was found in the truck, riddled with gunshot wounds. Fast forward to 24 hours later, they found Gretar below Illulakletta, hiding out in a cave like an outlaw. Although he was armed, he laid down his weapons and confessed to the killing and beating of the girls. So our listeners out there have closure. Gretar was found guilty and sentenced to 16 years in prison on June 28th, 1983. Now, for those of you that don't know much about the Icelandic law system out there, the maximum time that you can get for a murder is 16 years, primarily because Iceland is a proponent for rehabilitation. We don't have death sentences. We don't have any of the things that are happening in other worlds outside of Iceland. So once he got out of jail or prison, he moved to North Iceland, only to be reprimanded again by the police multiple other times for aggression, guns, check, and bill fraud. So the dude moves to Denmark. That's like a normal thing if you're a, you know, a person that can't live in Iceland anymore. You go to Denmark. But now it's said that he's in his 80s, living out the rest of his days in Urðarfells, Sveitina. I truly hope that Yvette has found peace and isn't one of the many ghosts that are said to haunt these sands. But again, no one really knows, right? So I gotta ask, Vanessa, after all hearing this story today, would you ever hitchhike?
I would definitely hitchhike, but like I wouldn't get into just anyone's car. So there's that. I feel like I would be like, eh, you look like you smell. Or, eh, you look like you're a murderer. Thanks, but no thanks.
Like seriously, you would just size the person up. Like they put their window down and say, hey, jump in the car. You would be like, and no thank you, but thank you.
Yeah, I think so. I think like if it was, you know, if I saw someone like me, I'd be like, hey, that'd be fun. And totally get in that person's car. But if I saw someone that I thought looks like, you know, like they might smell or be mean or be a serial killer, I'd probably say no.
Okay. Well, I'm on the no bus. I'm never going to hitchhike ever.
Let's just put it out this way. I would hitchhike in Iceland. Anywhere else in the world, no.
Okay. Fair.
I mean, this is like the safest like country in the world.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
All right. So are you ready for where my favorite Icelandic song comes into play in all of this, Vanessa?
Yeah, for sure.
So in 1991, the fabulous Bubi Morthens and Runar Júlason releases a song named Myrdal Sander. And that is inspired by these very true events. And let me tell you the little story about how I found the song in the first place. So if you can picture this for me, let's go back in time to, I don't remember when. So one day, my husband Davíð and I are in the car, and I don't remember where we're driving from, but this song comes on. You know, he's got a great playlist, and I love to rock out to it. But it's the first time I'm hearing this song. And I'll be honest and say I started having a little dance party with myself because it's so upbeat and super fun. I mean, you've heard it, the song I'm talking about, right, Vanessa?
Yeah.
Right. So But after the song is done, I say, wow, this is my new favorite Icelandic song. Maybe I should start playing it on our adventure wedding days. And Davíð laughs his freaking ass off and says, Anne, don't you realize what this is talking about? And I'm like, yeah, sure. It's about the black sands outside of Vík. He then recants the full tale in detail for me. So then it's like suddenly deemed my Icelandic murder song. And if I've piqued your curiosity, I'll link in the show notes a live performance of this song so that you can see for yourself and understand how fabulously upbeat and amazing, and it doesn't sound like it's a murder song, but it is. And although we can't play the song on here because we don't have Booby or Runar's like permission to play this, I'm gonna translate it loosely for you. And the lyrics translate to, it's raining, dark, and harmful shadows are on the prowl on Mýrdalssandur, and shelter is nowhere to be found. There's an abandoned car by the side of the road and a living soul nowhere to be seen. Your worst nightmare, it creeps and seeks. Your life, it snatches with warm lips, blood warm lips. You can run, but you won't hide. He, the fear, will capture you with its ice cold chains, ice cold chains, ice cold chains, and you won't escape. With your nerves flaring, trembling, you breathe, sobbing, you crawl, shivering, you wait, and time passes. I mean, seriously, the chorus is, you can run, but you won't hide. Like, what the fuck?
Wow. I mean, I've heard the song, but, like, and I usually am a very, like, avid, like, lyric listener. But, like, because it's so upbeat, like, I didn't even, like, yeah, it didn't, like,
register?
Yeah, right. Registered.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Now I do not feel so alone, because I will say I have played this on a few Icelandic adventure wedding days, and I have specifically asked my couples and their guests what they thought of the song, if they thought it was about a murder in Iceland. And they're like, no. And then I tell them the story and they're like, WTF.
Whoa.
Yeah, okay. So now on to the ghost story from Skeiðararsandur. And to start with this story, it begins on September 19th, 1667.
Wait, that's before this. The previous story.
That's true. That is true. And maybe.
Okay.
Actually, I didn't even think about that. Maybe there was some kind of weird influence of Grétar.
That's crazy.
By these ghosts. I'm not sure. Like, we can talk about it after as well. But that's actually a good point. This story does begin before that, because this obviously was in the 1980s, the first story, and this one's in the 1600s. But this starts on, again, when a ship from the Dutch East India Company named the Het Wapen van Amsterdam gets stranded out on the shores. And fun fact about this ship is that it's said to have been carrying an insane amount of valuables like gold, precious metals, jewels, silk, etc. So it's fondly referred to as the Golden Ship in Icelandic history. The vessel was on its way back from the Netherlands to India. However, it had to take a stop in the Shetland Islands in fear of an attack by the British, because they were actually at war during this time period. While waiting for a Dutch escort, it blew off course to Iceland. But remember how I shared with you how expansive this area is? It's like, what, 321,000 acres or something to that effect? And remember, this area also has river flow coming down from Europe's largest glacier, Vatnajökull. So that means quicksand is around all over the place, alongside of the massive glacier-fed rivers. I mean, at this time, Iceland... I mean, shit, icebergs are still coming down with these giant floods that are coming down. So it's pretty serious shit. Which, speaking of quicksand, when was the last time you were in some quicksand, Vanessa?
You just had to add.
I mean, I'm actually talking literally and not figuratively.
I know. I have literally, okay, it wasn't that long ago that I was stuck in quicksand. Well, not stuck, but I continuously kept going into the same hole because I kept forgetting it was there.
And this was at the glacier.
This was the glacier, and I kept doing it again and again. I was in a hurry. I didn't have time to remember that there was quicksand in the way.
So true.
It was in my way.
So this shipwreck is still to this day one of the deadliest in Icelandic history. The 200 or so souls on board survived the wreck, and all of them made it to the beach. But for some reason, only 50 to 80 men were actually rescued.
What?
Mm-hmm. So what is believed to have happened to the other 150 folks or so, right? No one actually knows. However, many believe their spirits haunt the black sands in the south, like across the coast, constantly walking, waiting, trying to find their way home or find peace. Occurrences that people have had in this area have been things like seeing people walk towards them from the ocean. Like, I've had that experience happen when I've been driving through this area and been like, whoa, that's not a rock. That looks like a person. And ghost hitchhikers that also appear on the side of the road but disappear once you invite them in for a ride. Some locals have even said that they've experienced appearances of these people in period clothing in their dreams. But what about the treasures on the ship? What do you think happened to all of that valuable stuff? Remember, it's like called the golden ship in Icelandic history.
I think we need to take a trip out there and put some snorkeling stuff on and go, not snorkeling, because, you know, that's just the top, but like diving stuff and go find the treasures. And voila, I'm no longer where I am today. I'm famous.
All right. So there's a few theories and attempts of actually finding this boat and these treasures. So first, a painted lid from the chest, from a chest. I don't know what chest, but a chest on board is on display in the Skogar Museum. And remember how I referenced the Skogar Museum in our episode number 4, The Hauntings of Nøtesigil. And you can check out a rowan tree. Remember, I think I referenced that there. You can also check out the chest while you're there as well from this story. And the second is that some say the Danish government came in and took it all. Like, came in with fucking boats and, you know, cranes, or I don't know, and excavated it and got out all the goods. And now it's under the Danish government's kind of realm of law. But third, others say that the golden ship treasures went down with the ship, so it's still out there. And that brings me to the fourth point. Between 1960 and 1983, there were many attempts to unearth it by Icelanders. However, all were unsuccessful. And I've heard a few people are still searching for the golden ship and maybe other lost treasures that may have been a part of it. I mean, heck, the Holy Grail might even be out there. Who knows, right? So, Vanessa, do you think we should plan a date to do a treasure hunt out there?
1,000%. Name the date. I'll bring my shovel. Let's do it.
Yay. All right. So recapping what has just happened on Skíðaðarsandur, what did you learn today?
I learned that I probably shouldn't hitchhike, but hopefully you won't be doing a podcast about me one day.
That you're like cut up into sashimi bites?
And then fed to Icelandic fish and then you all eat me?
Yeah, I don't want to be a cannibal.
No. Then maybe I shouldn't hitchhike.
Don't hitchhike.
I changed my answer. I will never hitchhike again.
Perfect. Yay. Thank you so much for tuning in today on our fabulous murder and ghost on Skíðaðarsandur. And if you like what you hear, give us a rating to keep us going. The day that you passed through. Thank you so much for venturing into the dark side of Iceland with us. We hope our stories resonate with you.
Stay tuned for more Nightmare Worthy podcasts. And if you want to hear more, give us a follow on whatever podcast platform you're listening to. You can also find us on Instagram at Eerie Iceland and by searching Eerie Iceland on Facebook.
See you next time.
packing.